It is week 38 of the year 2021. Outside, some patches of blue sky are appearing. I haven't had any coffee today, and you're listening to Father Roderick to the Max. Oh my, oh my. I haven't had a single cup of coffee today. It's already bad that I'm living on instant coffee for most of the time that I spent here at the Rectory of Father Henry, because I don't like the parish coffee that they have. But now I'm out of any instant coffee, and the only substitute I could find in the cupboard was something that said it was latte macchiato, but it just tasted like, I don't know, some milky solution you would even not feed to a cat. I was okay for most of the morning, but now I'm starting to feel the effects of not having had my coffee. All that, of course, is soon gonna be solved because I'm planning on moving over to my new home. The rectory is almost finished now. And one of the first things I will do is to make sure that I can make some good, real coffee there. Because, man, I need some. Today they're putting the floors in place, so I'm going to get carpet on the upper floor and on the stairs, and downstairs we're going to get tiles. I think it's going to look amazing. And once that is done, I think we need to fix some electricity and then we need to clean up the place and I can move in. The 1st of October is my goal date, even though on the Saturday, so Saturday the 2nd, we're officially going to clean up everything. But what I'm going to do is once the electrician is done, I'm going to clean at least one room and make sure that I have a bed there so I can actually move in on the 1st of October. There's no negotiation possible. I will sleep in that house and I'll be gone here. And there's one more thing that I need to do before I move in, and that is I have to make sure that I have internet. There is already a fiber connection, but the previous owner, of course, has canceled his subscription. So now I need to make sure that I have a working connection. And preferably on Wednesday when the electrician is coming over, we also need to connect all the different wires that go to the various ports that I had installed or that the electrician installed for me. I'm so looking forward to it. I feel like my life has been on hold for more than half a year. Ever since I got the notice that I had to move. But of course, that's not true. I've been able to continue my work. I've been doing a lot of filming during the summer. I'm still editing a lot of the TV work. So I'm currently doing a series of shorts for the online page that is linked to my TV show. And I get to do little videos about Rome, which is a lot of fun. Unfortunately, I don't have time nor the budget. Maybe I would have time later this month to go to Rome and film some new stuff, but I have a lot of extra material that I never used or sometimes used partially in my previous episodes about Rome. And I'm just rewriting small short blogs, like 3-minute blogs, and then I add some images to it. Still takes a lot of time, and that's because I'm still perfectionistic. I can't really get rid of that will to make something really, really nice. And well, in fact, this has a tiny, tiny budget. It would barely be enough for a podcast, and I'm still doing these 4-minute videos that are, I definitely on the level of you could put it on TV. That's it's good enough for that. But oh well, I enjoy it. It's really fun to make these short videos about Rome. So this past week, I worked on a video about the cats of Rome. There is a cat sanctuary on the Largo di Torre Argentina, which is really in the center of Rome. I think in 1929, they were digging up a square surrounded by 4 temples. And according to historians, the square is actually the place where Julius Caesar was murdered. And so it is a very important historical place. And ever since they started to dig that up, it's still an open space, even though, of course, the real estate that surrounds it is super, super valuable. So it would be economically, of course, much, much more profitable to just build a big apartment building there. But thankfully, the city of Rome knows that history is part of what makes Rome so interesting for tourists. So they kept it open. You look down on a pit. You can't really walk into it. Although, from what I've heard, they are working on creating some elevated pathways for tourists, so that you can actually go to the former street level. Because now it is a big hole in the ground. But of course, you're looking at what used to be the ground level. That is why all the other archaeological digs in the city of Rome are always situated sometimes 3-4 meters below the current street level. But since they opened that space and they dug up all these remains of the square and of the temples, the place became a harbor for cats, stray cats. So I read somewhere on a website there are about 300,000 cats in Rome. And more than half of them are living in the streets. And what I did not know, and that's partially why I wanted to make this video, is that Rome has very strict laws protecting these cats and protecting animals in general. And it's just something I never expected in a city like Rome, because it's a city, it's busy, it's old, and you don't expect that attention to the welfare of animals. But it is actually for cats. There is a special law that says that cats can choose where they want to live, and if there are two cats or more, it is officially recognized as a colony, and the cats have the right to be fed at that place that they have chosen to live in. Now, I assume that is kind of like, sometimes is the case in Italy, a bit of a loose rule. If they need to build something there, then I'm pretty sure that these cats will get chased anyway. But right now, the cats, there are about 125 cats that live among the ruins of Largo di Torre Argentina. And there are a number of volunteers that are taking care of them. There are three big cat colonies, and then there are hundreds, if not thousands, of other less famous cat colonies in and around Rome. Because, of course, when I say Rome and 300,000 cats, it's not just the historical center of Rome. It is Rome, but also all the outskirts, and it's a vast city. So 300,000 cats seems a lot, but if you look at the total surface of the city, well, it's still a lot, but you won't notice it that much. And then I kind of investigated the Catholic side of the story. If you look around for information about cats and Catholics, you find a legend. Because that's what it is. It's not really an historical fact, but there is the legend that Pope Leo the 12th, saying that off the top of my head, in the Middle Ages, put a ban on cats and even started an extermination campaign for cats. The reason being that he was informed by one of his German not really ambassadors, but he had sent some people to check out the situation of the church in Germany. That person came back with a report that there was a satanic sect, and they would have these rituals where a black cat was involved. And so, according to legend, that was for the Pope the reason to go and persecute cats and kill them all. That is historically not corroborated at all. It's just one of those urban legends that you read about, and it sometimes even ends up on a Wikipedia page. It's like sometimes I really think that there is a flaw in the moderation of information sources like Wikipedia, where people will, I think, purposely insert all sorts of anti-Catholic stories, but it's baseless, and it's sometimes it's based on a misunderstanding of Catholic doctrine, or it's just plain like total speculation. Like a trope you see almost always on these pages is that Christian rituals are not Christian at all. They are in fact pagan rituals that the Catholics have subverted and turned into their own Christian ritual, but that there is nothing Christian about it. It's all pagan, and they do that with Christmas. They do that with Easter, all sorts of feasts, and there may be some rituals or some days that before Christianity had a pagan meaning, but that could also be a coincidence. And even if in certain cases, and it's absolutely a very small amount of the Christian feast days where they will have taken a pagan ritual or a pagan feast day and transformed it, you know, why would that make it invalid? Why would it be not Christian to do that? After all, Christianity has transformed culture, and transforming is not destroying something and then making something completely new. It is infusing the culture with Christian notions. So I don't see the problem for that, but it's often used in atheistic circles as proof of the fact that Christianity is bogus because, well, it's all from pagans. And, well, anyway, when I was reading up on this story of cats and popes, same thing. Everybody takes it for granted that it was true, and people have this image of the Middle Ages where they even call them the Dark Ages or the Dark Times. I've noticed that, especially in Anglo-Saxon circles, which is completely wrong. It's first of all, the Middle Ages, we're talking about 1,000 years of culture. The Middle Ages are not just a century or something like that, where everybody was just walking around with axes and killing and vomiting. That's a caricature of what the Middle Ages are. But then it kind of fits the popular narrative that the church in the past, especially in the Middle Ages, was just power hungry and evil. And then so a story about a pope killing thousands of cats. Yeah, well, that should be true, right? Because it kind of fits the mental image that we have of the church in the past. I think as Catholics, we need to make sure that people are well informed, and we've seen these past few years an emergence of fact checkers and lots of sources like Snopes, for instance, but also a number of newspapers and news organizations have people, journalists or other experts that work for them that have the function to check claims in the news and to debunk if necessary, or to clarify, to add information. Unfortunately, in the Catholic Church, we're kind of busy with stuff, so there aren't that many people that have time for that, and I don't think there is an institution that is there for that, unless, you know, we're talking about something like Catholic Answers, where in their radio shows they will debunk sometimes these presumptions that people have about the Catholic Church. But I think it would be interesting to have an organization or a group of volunteers that just would post accurate information and verify all those historic assumptions or claims, even on websites like Wikipedia. Because if you don't bring truth to a muddied perception of the church, then, you know, that's causing people to turn away from faith and will make it harder for them maybe to find the truth of the gospel. So there, plus it is also good for Catholics to make sure that they know the facts. And I think there are many Catholics that would believe even the weirdest stories that they read because they have not been educated that much. There's so many Catholics that have never opened a page of the Catechism, that never receive formation other than maybe preparation for First Communion or Sacrament of Confirmation, and that's it. So they become very vulnerable to misinformation. And, well, let's not be naive. Misinformation is big business right now. We see it everywhere. And so we shouldn't be surprised that it's also directed towards churches and religions. So seek the truth and always make sure that you have a number of sources that you check before you believe something, and make sure that those sources are reliable sources and created by scientists and historians, not just, you know, opinions that people put on the web and then people believe it because it was on the internet. I read it because it was on the internet. That attitude, that understanding of do your own research has brought nothing but trouble lately. So anyway.
Just look at the x-rays. You see that dark spot there? Whiplash.
Whiplash? Oh no.
And this smudge here that looks like my fingerprint? No, that's trauma.
I am healthier than I've been in a long, long time. And most of it has to do with me wanting to prepare for the marathon of Rotterdam, which I'm happy to say will actually go through. A lot of these events have been canceled in previous months and years. I think the Rotterdam Marathon has been canceled 3 times now. They wanted to do it in April, which is the normal time. Then they rescheduled it for October last year. It was canceled again. Then they moved it to April this year. It was canceled again. And now it's scheduled for the last week of October, on October the 25th, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm going to run it. And I've been preparing for this marathon all through. It was actually the 24th, I should say, 24th of October. Which is actually the weekend that I was originally planning to celebrate my ordination day in 1996. So this year, on the 19th of October, I will be a priest. I will have been a priest for 25 years. And so I was already planning with Father Henry, can we do a special mass or something? And then it hit me. It's like, oh, wait a minute, I got to run a marathon that day. So now I'm going to find another occasion to celebrate it. Maybe I'll combine it with a housewarming party because of the move into my rectory in Bennekom. And I'm definitely going to plan something in Rome. So Father Henry is going to Rome, I think the Monday or maybe even the 20th. No, probably Monday after the 24th. Just to be in Rome again, now that it's easier to travel again. And of course, it would be cool to go to Rome as well and maybe celebrate Mass there, to just as a form of thanksgiving for these 25 years, and go wave at the Pope or something like that. I'll keep you posted on my plans. But this Marathon of Rotterdam has really been a perfect motivation for me to lose weight. First of all, I had gotten really heavy, and I think it is due to COVID, definitely the long COVID effect. I was constantly tired. So of course, when I'm tired, I'm not really, I don't have much energy to go out or go to do a workout. It was also pretty limited what you could do, although running is still, that was something that we could do even during the lockdowns. I didn't do much walking, because normally the walking event that I partake in the summer was also canceled, so I didn't have a strong motivation to go walk. And then I think it was also due to just all the kind of emotional upheaval that the unexpected move caused, and the fact that I had to, my life was completely upside down for 6 months. And so, or even longer than that, because I heard that I had to move, I think in March, and then, no, it was a little bit earlier. I think it was in February, towards the end of February. And then I was supposed to get out of the of the rectory on April the 1st, on Holy Thursday of all days. Figuring out a place to stay, settling here in the attic, Father Henry, not having my own daily rhythm anymore. All that, it took me months to get used to that new situation and to find new balance. And having this goal of running a marathon has been super beneficial for me to get serious about losing the weight. I got myself one of those smart scales, a very cheap one. It's a Chinese brand, Mi, and it measures not only your weight, but according to the advertisements, it also sends a little electrical current from one foot to another. And by doing that, it can measure the resistance of certain elements in your body, and that's how it can determine your visceral fat percentage, your overall fat muscle balance, your protein levels, even your water, percentage, whether you are hydrated or not. And I was alarmed by what it showed. It was, of course, the overall weight, but that I was aware of. I was definitely too heavy. It also gave me like a goal for my length and my constitution. My ideal weight would be 66 kilograms. And so I was very far away from 66. Let me just recalculate that in pounds here real quick. So my ideal weight would be 146 pounds. I'm a small guy. I'm a hobbit. However, my weight when I started this journey towards health was 84 kilos, and that is 185 pounds. I weighed 185 pounds. I don't think I've ever been this heavy before. And so I knew that there was only one way to lose the weight, and that is to work out, to change my lifestyle, and to count calories. Changing my lifestyle means changing what I eat, when I eat. I talked at length during my show, The Walk, about how much having a regular schedule every day, having a good planning, being realistic about how much time you have to do certain things, be realistic about the things that you commit to, and get rid of stuff that is only causing stress. The more recent discoveries when it comes to sleep and how to get quality sleep and how much sleep and the amount of sleep is impacting my overall constitution. All that has been part of this lifestyle change. And I there's still part of me that feels like these past months have been lost in a certain way, and I can't really be myself or live my own life as long as I'm here in this temporary situation. On the other hand, I did manage to lose all that weight while living in these difficult conditions where I'm not always in charge of what we eat and when we eat and if it's quiet or not. Very often, getting to sleep at 10 o'clock in the evening was super difficult because of the students that live next door and often make a ruckus until late in the early morning. And nevertheless, despite that, I have been able to make some substantial changes. And it feels so good, and I'm so happy with these changes and the effects on my overall feeling, my well-being, my emotion, that they're here to stay. What has also been extremely helpful is the whole approach of creating habits and micro habits. I think that has been the biggest discovery. It has had an impact on everything. So knowing that when on these certain moments during the day, breakfast, lunch, dinner, before I go to bed, that's all linked to specific times in my calendar. And then I added micro habits to it. So for instance, I want, in order to relax more, I read after my evening prayers. I take an hour to read. And if I can't find that hour, then I'll make sure that I schedule an extra hour later. So I've, instead of just wishing to become healthy, I planned to become healthy. And so in the morning, after I've done my daily journal, I've written my daily journal, I then take the things that I jotted down as things that I hope I'm going to do today, and I give them a time slot. And that has been so helpful to, first of all, learn to estimate in a more realistic way what I can do and what I can't do. And it made me realize that I'm chronically underestimating the time that things take, even a run. You know, I would put, my running schedule tells me to go run at a certain speed, and then it says that takes 2 hours. But what I forget to calculate is that before I run, I still need to get ready to run. And then after run, I need to take a shower, change clothes. So I need to add an hour to the actual time of the run. And if you don't, then, and you put other stuff in your calendar, then you will never get it done. And that creates stress. And if it's commitments that involve other people, you may disappoint them. So constantly planning stuff, even planning my spare time. I've gotten to the point that I'm actually scheduling everything that I do for myself, like reading a book or watching a movie, going to the movie theater, which I'm, again, able to do now. I schedule that as a meeting. So it is, I've got the color red for meetings because I'm always afraid that I forget to go to a meeting or to make time for a meeting. So, but these things that I know are essential for my health, I put them in my calendar as meetings, which means that whatever happens, that has priority on anything else. And then, of course, the art of scheduling is also to create some room, some margin in that calendar, so that if something unexpected happens and or you have to make some changes, that you can without jeopardizing your tasks. So changing also my what I eat, the way I eat has been yielding fruit, and I've been eating lots of fruit as well. That's amazing. and then I've also started to protect that. That was really hard at the beginning because I'm a people pleaser, and at first I was just constantly I felt that I was dependent on Father Henry and Eric and Luigi in the house. When they would eat, I would eat. And that would sometimes be very frustrating because there is no schedule for eating in this house. There's not a schedule for anything in this house. There are no fixed times. And so, and then for quite a while, I was frustrated by that. And I was like, oh my gosh, if only I would live in my own house. And then at one point I was like, well, why am I playing the victim here? If I want to make changes, I can just communicate them. I am going to cook at 6. There will be food on the table at 6:30. If you want to eat, you have to tell me. I'll make the food. So I put myself in charge of the kitchen. So I know that what I cook is healthy. And on Saturday, for instance, there is this tradition of eating fried food. So there is always this huge chunk of red meat. This has been a tradition for as long as I know Father Henry, in his world, or in his life. So it's a chunk of red meat, so a beef or something like that, fries, and mayonnaise, and then a salad with lots of honey in it and white cheese. So it's a salad. Technically speaking, it's a salad, but it's also extremely unhealthy, or it has a lot of unhealthy elements in it. And for the first few weeks, I felt that I had to come along and eat that. And at one point I was like, but I don't even like eating that. I don't want to eat that. So now I just feel free to say, well, hey, I'm going to eat earlier. Or maybe I'll just sit with you, but I'll eat a salad. And maybe that at first they thought I was a little bit weird. But well, they ended up accepting, and they see that I'm a lot healthier than I was a half a year ago. So, well, maybe me taking a stance actually helps to motivate my friends here in the house as well to pay more attention to what they eat and how they live their life. So, and then of course, running almost every day, and also taking seriously the rest. That is one big challenge for me, is that when my schedule says you rest, so you don't do any sports, you don't even walk too much, you really have to do that. Otherwise, your muscles won't be able to recuperate, and then ultimately you may end up overtraining or hurting yourself. And that's the last thing I want. So at first, when I was filling in, like, I have this checklist of habits, so to make sure that I do them every day, there was this habit that I needed to check, which said, workout, burn 500 calories. That's the minimum. And then I was frustrated on the days that I was resting, and I was sneaking in extra exercise just so I could put a check mark next to that goal. And then I was like, that is ridiculous. I'm just doing something that is, I know, is unhealthy. So instead, I renamed that particular task into from exercise to exercise / rest. And now I can also put a check mark next to it, and I feel good about taking time to rest. That it's all, you know, this journey has been amazing. And I'm so happy that this morning I was, so I went from 185 pounds, 84 kilograms to 73 kilograms, so 161 pounds. So I'm getting there. It's still quite a way to go to 145 pounds or 146, but it's feasible. And if I continue at this rate, I think it will take me probably, I would say, 8 more weeks to get there. 2 months, let's say 2.5 months, which means that, you know, around Christmas time, I will be a very lean, healthy hobbit. And I couldn't be happier with it. So, and of course, this whole process has given me back a lot of energy. And the fatigue is still there from time to time, but it's very, very rare. There are some days, sometimes when I run, like this past Monday, I ran 32 kilometers. That's a lot. That's 3.5 hours of running. And in the afternoon, I just had to lay down. I was too tired. But that's physical exercise, so it's actually normal to be tired. But I did sleep a bit, which normally I wouldn't do. So maybe there are a few remnants of COVID. I don't know. But it's getting better and better, and I couldn't be happier, because long COVID was, it's not an adventure that I would like to repeat any time in my life. So since I'm the master of the kitchen, as long as I live here, I've been cooking up a storm from time to time, and it's a lot of fun to also introduce new types of food to my friends here. And so I did, I made a few curries, which was, that's also pretty new to me, but it's very tasty. And I've recently started to cook also in the morning. That is definitely something that I learned on TikTok. It's just realizing that the breakfast that I thought was universal and normal, and that actually, that's just very, very dependent on the culture that you live in, and the kind of, you know, cereal with milk, pancakes with maple syrup. That kind of breakfast hasn't been breakfast for a long, long time, and it's an invention by the Kellogg's company, and that even this idea that I thought was promoted by nutritionists, that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. I remember that when I was still recording Healthy Catholic, which was a podcast about health, It's now the walk. It's kind of similar. Well, actually, it's not similar, but I was very much focusing on health. And I remember talking about breakfast and how important it was. And it's better to eat a lot during breakfast and then eat less during the day. It's all bogus. That was deliberately introduced as a means to sell more cornflakes and other cereals. And especially what you have in the United States, where they eat dessert for breakfast. That's what it is. It's either dessert or it is like a lunch for breakfast. It's just so strange, and I had to get used to it so much when I went there. It's all very much culturally based, and it is perpetuated by just the commercial business around it that wants us to eat unhealthy in the morning. But then I started to see TikToks from people that live in different parts of the world, like I'm following a lot of these Chinese cooks and everything. And what they eat for breakfast is what I would eat for dinner. It's with rice and veggies. And one of the things that I learned while counting my calories, and then you have a lot of articles on the website that I use for that, and one of these articles really promoted the idea of eating veggies at every meal, so also during breakfast, and they gave some recipes, and it was all recipes that involved cooking, and I was like, well, actually, why not? When I was in China with my mom, I remember that there were only a few hotels that actually served European breakfast with bread and milk. Again, milk. I remember the one of our Chinese guides told us that when she was a child, she would always eat this kind of porridge in the morning, and it was made with water and corn powder or something like that. And well, of course, I was being adventurous, so I tried that out, and it was not good at all. It felt like glue. I was eating glue or something like that, but apparently very nutritious, very hot, which was also weird to eat something very hot in the morning. But then in other hotels where we stayed in the morning, there was just rice and sometimes some chicken and cooked, not broccoli, but other veggies. Well, the Chinese were just eating that. And then I'm thinking, well, actually, why not? For my body, it's just calories and it's nutrition. So who cares what form it is? And so I kind of started experimenting with this. And I started with omelets. That's the easiest thing, because I needed to cut back the amount of calories that I consumed during the day. And so the easiest way to do that is get rid of the bread. And because bread has a pretty high calorie count, and instead replacing it with other fibers, like for instance a salad in the morning. I never had a salad in the morning, but I'm starting to like it because it's fresh, it's nice, it gives you a very full feeling even though you're not eating that many calories. And I started to do experiments with omelets, many failed experiments, by the way, because what they show you on TikTok, I've never been able to replicate any of that. Then I tried breakfast tacos or burritos, which also was problematic because I would always burn my burritos. And recently I've started to experiment with rice. So this morning, for instance, as breakfast, I cooked some brown rice, which is, of course, much more nutritious and has more fiber than white rice, which is, well, almost entirely empty calories. But so brown rice, I diced up half of a tomato, very tiny cubes of tomato, put those in a little bit of oyster sauce, and then I mix in a raw egg. But because the rice is so steaming hot, you just hustle it about, and then the egg will start to solidify. And you get, well, something that looks a bit like fried rice, but I didn't fry it. And the funny thing is, I always associated rice with being very heavy and very, you know, full of calories. But if you make it like this and you mix in some veggies, it's actually very modest in calories. It was about 260, I think, in total calories for breakfast. If I would eat two slices of whole wheat bread with some cheese and some jam, usually I end up eating more than 450 calories. If I add an egg and some fruit, it may even go over 500. So that is a third of my overall calorie budget for the day. Whereas this rice that I ate this morning, it kept me feeling full for most, well, actually for the entire morning. I ran about an hour, and I wasn't even hungry afterwards. So I still have about 660 calories left for dinner, which means I can cook something more serious tonight. So that's kind of what I'm experimenting with. Sometimes I just go for yogurt with an apple or something like that. And I'm still on the lookout for more breakfast recipes. But ever since I got rid of that idea that breakfast has to be, you know, a cup of orange juice, slices of bread, butter, chocolate sprinkles, and I don't know, Gouda cheese. Once I got rid of that idea, and I told myself that is just cultural. It really doesn't make a difference to your body. In fact, there are alternatives to this that are more filling and healthier. I'm starting to really look forward to my breakfast, because breakfast was always the same and always also eaten in a hurry. That's something I learned as a child when we had to rush to school. And of course, being a teenager, I couldn't get out of bed. Also may have been because I was reading until 3 o'clock in the morning. And so I never had time to get a proper breakfast. So I just shove in the food, eat, drink some piping hot tea, burn my tongue, and then race to school on my bike. Now, I feel like breakfast is for me an important moment of the day to start the day in a healthy way, to do some cooking also that is just helps me to wake up. And well, I was complaining about not having had coffee this morning. Ultimately, of course, coffee should be optional. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a good cup of coffee, but I'm definitely not addicted to it to the point of having to drink a cup of coffee every hour, like some people I know. And that too is good, because coffee, of course, in itself has no, well, maybe there's some research that it has some benefits, but it's not that coffee itself is doing something good with your body. The reason why you feel more awake once you have had your cup of coffee is that it is, it's doing something to your brain chemically, or I'll let someone who has more knowledge about that explain it. But it prevents you from feeling tired, even though the body itself is not more awake. So it's basically kind of blocking or inhibiting certain signals. And that is why you think that coffee is giving you energy, but it's just hiding the fact that you're tired. And so, oh, speaking of being tired, I had one big accident this weekend. I was staying in a bed and breakfast over the weekend to go to this fantasy fair in the south of the country. And they had already booked all their rooms, but since I know them personally, they made a bed for me in one of their offices. It's a tiny, tiny little office, and they squeezed in a bed there. I was super happy that I could stay there for the night, because it's more than an hour drive from the castle to here, the rectory in Wageningen. And then I was invited for dinner with family. And then at the end of dinner, they asked me if I wanted to have a cup of coffee. And I said, no, if I drink coffee, I'm going to be awake all night long. My body is not used to stimulants in the evening. So tomorrow is going to be a long day. I'm going to be out outside for probably more than 14 hours. So yeah, I need my sleep. Do you have any herbal tea? Sure, we have herbal tea. Just look in the cupboard. So I'm looking and I find this herbal tea. And I thought it was to make you sleepy. You know, it's there are some of these herbs that are beneficial for a good night's rest. So I make that tea, I drink it, and it, you know, herbal tea. I deliberately avoid it, regular tea, because it has caffeine as well. And then I tried to sleep. And I was, my eyes were wide open. I was wide awake. My head was spinning all the ideas. And I was like super, super, super awake. And I even felt like my heart is beating as if I'm like in the middle of the day and I'm in the middle of a run. What is happening? And at first I blamed it on the mattress because it was a very hard mattress and I'm used to slightly more support for my back. So I thought maybe that's it. Is it too cold in the room? And then hours later, I was still awake. So I ended up listening to an audiobook just to kind of try to do something that would calm me down. I did sleep maybe 4 hours that night, but I woke up so tired. And I told the family, I was like, I don't understand it. Why did I... And then the lady asks me, what kind of tea did you drink? So I go to the tea and I see that it actually is tea that is supposed to wake you up. And it had, what was it? I don't actually know. It's Soothout. It's, let me go translate that real quick because I've never seen the word in English. Licorice root. So it was tea on, I think it had anise and licorice root. And licorice root actually is known to heighten the blood pressure. And it most definitely was the reason that I couldn't sleep. Because the next night I took the proper herbal tea and I slept so good and there was nothing wrong. So and now I know that I have to avoid tea based with licorice root at all costs because it's worse than coffee. It's worse than coffee. Hey, one last thing, because this is the kitchen segment. You may have seen on social media that I bought a cookbook on Amazon, which I was super excited about because it contains a number of recipes from the Italian kitchen, and they tell you how to make the kind of food that I love to eat when I'm in Rome. Usually on Amazon, they give you a preview, right? This was the Savour Italian Comfort Food book. They give you a preview. So I was browsing through the first few pages and I already saw a number or immediately saw a number of recipes that I wanted to try out in my new kitchen. And I'm going to give you one of them because it was right there on one of those free pages. So the book is called Savour Italian Comfort Food. It's no longer on sale. It's now $12.99, the Kindle version. The hardcover is $42. It's a beautiful hardcover book. The layout of the pages on the Kindle looks terrible. That's always... I don't understand why they just can't give us the same kind of page layout. Maybe it's because of the software. Kindle can't really format the pages. But it looks so bad on the Kindle. But I don't care because I bought it for the recipes. Now, one of the... It has the starters, very easy. Tomato bruschetta with olives and basil. That's a staple thing that they always serve you in Italian restaurants. It's very easy to make. You don't need a recipe for that. Then they had fried anchovy stuffed zucchini blossoms. That is delicious. You get that mostly in the spring when you go to Rome. Crostini with ricotta and soppressata. It's dry salami. With some ricotta. That's something I've never eaten. It sounds nice, though. I'm just going to scroll down a little bit. Stuffed mussels. That is also typically Italian. That sounds like a lot of work. Ricotta fritters with tomato sauce. That's something I'm going to make. And then fried stuffed rice balls. And even better, those are already fantastic. But then you've got the, where are they? Oh, here they are. Oh my gosh. My mouth is watering just by looking at the photo. Fried stuffed olives. This is my all-time favorite snack. And I will always ask in any Italian restaurants, do you have fried stuffed olives? And if they have, I need to order it. Now, this is a recipe from Abruzzo, and it uses big green olives. They're called, the Italian brand of the olive, or the genre, is Castelvetranos. They come from Sicily. They're pretty expensive, because of course they have to be imported, but maybe you can find them in a whole food market or something like that. But basically any big green olive will do. You just have to make sure that they are easy to, how do you say that? To unpit? Is that how you call it? You need to get the pits out. Normally you'd use a chef's knife to do that. What is important is that the olive is as intact as possible because you're going to stuff it. Then you use beef, pork, this is all ground pork, ground beef, parmigiano, nutmeg, egg yolk, some lemon zest, salt, and pepper. You put that in a bowl and you mix it together, and then you make tiny, like half teaspoon balls. Those you're going to put in every olive, you're going to put a little ball of meat like that, or meat mixture, and then you press the olive around the filling to seal it. Then you heat some oil and you whisk some milk and an egg into a bowl. You put some breadcrumbs and flour in separate bowls, and then you roll the olives in the flour, you dip them in the eggs mixture and coat them in breadcrumbs, and then you fry them until crisp and cooked through for about 3 or 4 minutes. And then you let them drain on a piece of paper towel. And then you can also season them with salt, even though the olives usually are already pretty salty. Now that is divine. It is so good. And it never crossed my mind that there should be a recipe for that, and it's something that you can make yourself. But now I can. And oh my gosh, I cannot wait to inaugurate my kitchen with recipes like these. So there you go. If you want to try it out, just go to Amazon online and look for Saveur Italian Comfort Food, and you'll find this recipe on the free pages that you can browse if you click on the cover of the book.
I'm quite keen on comic books, especially the ones about superheroes. I find the whole mythology surrounding superheroes fascinating.
You ever try these comics?
No.
You know something?
No, what?
You read too many comic books.
Am I the only one to be a bit disappointed by the What If animated series on Disney Plus? I had high hopes when I heard about concept. You know, what if people would have taken a different turn in the stories that we know, and would have made different choices, or something unexpected happened? What would the MCU look like then? I love that concept. It's kind of a bit of a parallel universe type of question. And so I was looking forward to seeing these stories, but after seeing a couple of them, I was like, yeah, the idea was fun, but I wasn't particularly interested in these stories. They didn't really work for me. Maybe it's also because it doesn't really have any weight, because it's all, like, it's non-canon. Sometimes they were pushing it a little bit too much. The idea is fun, but the actual stories were a bit bland. That's kind of how I felt. The one with the zombies was the worst. But maybe there are some more episodes coming that will kind of counterbalance it. Or maybe it's just me. I didn't care for those episodes. for the series. I was looking forward to seeing something new in a Marvel universe, but instead I got to see Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, which I reviewed in my regular show. That's definitely a movie I'm going to see again once it is on Disney Plus. I don't think I'm going back to the theater for it. It was nice. It was fun. Definitely very entertaining. But yeah, I think seeing it again, I don't think it's going to bring me much in terms of the story is not that complicated. There's not much, ultimately not much depth to the story. That's fine because it's just a Marvel superhero movie. One movie that I do want to see again is Dune because of its atmosphere. Dune is an experience. It's not just a movie. And I want to go back to that world and soak it in. And for me, seeing it for the first time was more like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that they actually made it work. And this is the best film version that you could wish for. And now I want to go back. And then now that I am over this initial awe of the grandeur of this movie, I just want to experience it again and kind of focus more on the characters and on the story itself. I just want to be in that universe again. And movie theater is perfect for that. Another series that I'm going to review hopefully next week, if I have time, because of course it's going to be a busy week with moving and cleaning the directory. If I have the occasion, I will watch a few episodes of the Star Wars anime series that has premiered on Disney Plus. That one looks amazing. And I can't believe that some Star Wars fans have been complaining that it contains too many Japanese elements. And I'm thinking, do you know anything about Star Wars? Star Wars is one big homage to the Japanese culture and Japanese storytelling. And if you know how George Lucas got his ideas, he took it from Japanese cinematography and Japanese storytelling. So this comes full circle now with this series, and it's actually fun to see that it works. Yes, it's a bit different. It's not canon, but there are some great ideas there from what I've seen in the trailer, and it's more of interest to me than What If. I forgot what it was called. Oh, Star Wars Visions. I was surprised that they dumped the entire season online right away, whereas with What If, they make us wait every week. I kind of think that they should really... There are two things that I want to say. I think that we should really have these weekly releases. It gives us something to talk about. It creates community, because every week there's something that brings the Star Wars fans together. So it gives also more time to really appreciate every episode. The second thing is, I do believe that movies should first premiere in movie theaters and then go online later. So what they tried with Mulan and I think they did it with Luca as well. They didn't do it for Shang-Chi, and I think it paid off because the box office revenue was huge. And I think something tells me that if they would have put this also simultaneously on Disney Plus, even if you have to pay extra for it, they probably would have had much less impact on the box office. So, and I heard from my American friends that June in the US is going to premiere in both in movie theaters, but also on HBO Max. Now, I don't know how many people have HBO Max, but I guess a lot, because that's where people watched Game of Thrones. But I think it's almost a shame to see this on a streaming service, because this is a movie made for a movie theater. And seeing it on a small screen, it's just going to spoil the fun. It's not made for that. And it may also hurt the box office revenue and ultimately damage the chances of it getting a sequel, because Dune is just part one of the story. And apparently they first want to see how it does at the box office before they decide to give to green light part two. I would be devastated if they don't do part two, because this movie needs it. Sometimes, however, these streaming platforms will give another chance to a series that can't continue for whatever reason. One of those series is The Orville, which is kind of this Star Trek pastiche. It started as a pastiche almost, an homage to classic Star Trek, but it got so good and so popular soon that now it's owned by Disney, I suppose. They put it here on Star, which is kind of a separate section on Disney Plus, where it's like Hulu in the United States, where they have, you know, all sorts of other movies that are not kid-friendly or family-friendly, don't really match the Disney brand, but they still are owned by the Disney Corporation. So I saw that the first two seasons of The Orville are also now on Disney Plus. I couldn't be happier because I've seen a few episodes and I really loved what they did. And it totally feels like an updated version almost of classic Star Trek. And maybe that's one of the reasons that we do get classic Star Trek soon with the series with Captain Pike at the helm of the Enterprise. I can't wait to see more of that series as well. These are great times to be a science fiction fan and a geek in general.
The humanoid must not escape.
Wrapping things up with a very short game segment about Valheim, which, of course, by now you know that is my favorite PC game that I'm playing. It's still not available for other platforms, but this is worth getting a PC for if you like these kind of games. It is both a survival game, but what I enjoy most of the game is that you can build houses, you can build entire villages, you can invite friends over to come and help you build, which is something I've done many times with people from our community, and it's so much fun. And I've learned a lot also about building with wood and natural materials. Now, they just issued another update of the game called Hearth and Home, and it gives builders, more specifically, a number of options that weren't available in the vanilla version of the game. And you can now create even more spectacular houses. And I can't wait to go back into that world and build some more. Plus, it added, it rebalanced the game. It added more recipes, so even cooking can become something fun to do. And this is just one of the announced updates. They're going to add more realms, different parts of that world. It's such an amazing game and it's so affordable. It's the best purchase that I've ever done. I've got literally hundreds of hours out of that game, and it only cost me like $16 or something like that. If you have a PC and you like these kind of games, by all means, get it. You won't regret it. And with that, we've come to the end of this episode of Father Roderick to the Max. I hope you enjoyed listening. I'll be back next week with hopefully good news from the rectory in Bennekom. And, of course, for my patrons, you, otherwise you wouldn't be listening to this, I will record another video. Back then, when I first got the keys of the house, I filmed what it looked like. I will do a similar video showing you the end result after 6 months of hard work and a lot of sleepless nights. But it is really a home, and that's what I'm most grateful for. So, thank you for your ongoing support. Thanks for being a patron. I'll talk soon. God bless.